Life is a Highway. It's SNESCAPADES, a chronological journey through the North American Super Nintendo library with a few steps, with a few pit stops along the way. We play them briefly, we judge them harshly, we rank them. That is pretty much all you need to know. I am Chase Keys.
I'm Emmy Zero.
And we've got games today. We've got games that have a few things in common.
Yep.
They're about vehicles.
Yep. They're mostly made by Taito.
These are games that, okay, weirdly, I played for a little bit last night.
Mm-hmm.
Was kind of feeling all right about all of them.
Mm-hmm.
Played them again this morning. I'm feeling a little less all right about them.
You know, funny thing?
Yeah.
Exact opposite.
Really?
Had a bad time with all of these last night. Tried them again this morning, and I was like, you know what? These are all right.
Okay. All right. Well, you know what? Maybe I just woke up on the wrong side of the bed this morning and am a Mr. Grumpy Pants.
Or maybe we both started off from, like, different, like, ends of the thing and have kind of met in the middle. That's also possible.
That is possible, too. Well, I guess we'll get into it.
Yeah, we got to find out.
We have to examine these thoroughly under a microscope and, see what makes their motor run,
all
I guess.
Right. Yeah, I guess so. We should say first of all, we are into December 1993. We are again moving forward in the timeline, this is the first of four featured episodes that we will have about the games of December 93.
Yeah, four of them.
It's a lot of games this month. Chase, please go ahead and. Give us the deets.
Yes. So today, for the people, we have Super Chase HQ, we have Battle Cars, and we have Supernova. And I'm not entirely sure what order we wanted to tackle these in.
I mean, I think we should probably do Battle Cars first because it is the only non-Taito game. And I believe you have some kind of a Taito related deep dive for us this time, right?
You know, it is entirely possible that I have a Taito related deep dive for the people.
What do you say we go Battle Cars, Super Chase HQ, and then end on Supernova?
That sounds just fine to me. So I guess let's buckle our seatbelts in our weird spiky car and
yeah,
take off down the road in yet another freaking Mad Max inspired racing game.
Awful lot of these, weren't there?
Yeah, there sure were. There sure were. Was Mad Max a big thing in the 90s? I feel like it was more of an 80s thing.
Well, yeah, I mean, the weird thing is that, like, yeah, the Mad Max was a big thing in the 80s. There were no Mad Max movies in the 90s. And yeah, it was really kind of a dormant franchise until Fury Road. So
yeah,
very odd that there's so much of it here. But I don't know. Sometimes there's kind of a cultural knock-on effect. You know, where, like, it takes a while for, like, things to kind of seep through the culture. And, you know, maybe there were just, like, a bunch of people just getting into the production of games at this point who were like, what do I like? I like Mad Max. I'm going to make something influenced by that. Like, we've had Mad Max type stuff a bunch of times now. It's back again, baby.
It sure is. Mad Max is back and he's madder than ever. Madder Max.
That's right. To be clear, this isn't actually this is Mad Max inspired, but it's got its own very, I think, maybe overdeveloped fictional universe.
Yeah.
so where does this come from?
Battle Cars comes to us from developer Malibu Interactive and publisher Namco. It was made exclusively for the Super Nintendo, which I think
you
is another thing,
yeah,
that all three of these games have in common.
I believe that's right. Yes. I think these are all Super Nintendo exclusives, though Super Chase HQ and I guess probably also Supernova are arcade ports. But in terms of home console releases, I mean, I guess, well, Super Chase HQ is nominally, we'll talk about it, but it's kind of a situation. Yeah.
We will talk about it. Other than I will just put out there right now, they are both sequels to arcade games, but they are not direct ports of any actual like arcade games. So
understood.
Yeah, we'll put it that way. But yeah, so we got Battle Cars here. This is a game in which you are racing other battle cars. The one player game is sort of divided into two parts. You've got your cross country races where you're just trying to get to the next city and taking out other battle car racers along the way. And then once you get to that city, you enter boss mode, in which you have to race that city's boss for fame and fortune. Game has two currencies that let you upgrade your car. You get actual cash for winning races. You get credits for taking out other battle cars, because apparently, according to the instruction manual,
when you
take out a battle car, that means you get to get the money from all the scrap that is produced.
Yes, that's right.
You blow that car.
And yeah, so that's how you get the cash, I guess, and the sorry, that's how you get the credits, right? And then the cash is given to you. You don't see this in the game, but apparently via sponsorships from giant corporations that are impressed with your performance. That's the justification for why you're getting paid in like a point system based on, like I said, this game's like world and setting are probably a little bit unnecessarily over designed. Like the fact that like the cross country races have like a time limit on them is justified in the instruction manual with this like fairly lengthy backstory about how like the world governments prior to World War III created like an orbital space laser system to destroy dangerous weapons on the ground. And after World War III, those countries no longer exist, but the lasers still do, and the battle cars are so dangerous that they are recognized by the lasers as weapons of mass destruction. So if you stay on the cross-country racetrack for too long, they're gonna blow you up.
They've put so much work into the world building here that you almost wonder, like, was this a Cheetah Men situation where somebody had aspirations of like, oh, we're gonna make a Saturday morning cartoon out of this. This is gonna be the next big media franchise.
I mean, I don't know, but isn't Malibu Interactive, that's like the game development like branch of Malibu Comics. So
so
maybe they just, you know, thought, you know, yeah, we can do a comic, we can do, like you said, probably cartoon toys, all of this stuff based on this. And to its credit, this game, I'll say right off the bat, this is a Mode 7 racing game. It feels very inspired by F-Zero in a lot of ways. A lot of that world building that we're talking about is not actually in the game, but more of it is than with F-Zero. Like, the characters are here. There is some setting stuff that you see. Like, there is a bit of this stuff actually in the game, which I do appreciate.
Yeah, yeah, there is a lot of that. It feels very much like F-Zero, but with a more Mad Max sort of theme and also weapons.
Yeah, yeah.
Of which there are only three. There are discs, missiles, and mines, which, you know, I guess they do the job all right. I did really enjoy flinging discs at other cars and just kind of watching them fly off the road.
I found the weapon switching kind of confusing. Like, I never really understood how to fire which weapon I wanted to, other than that, like, mostly I was firing the discs. But yeah, I don't know. I feel like in some ways this game's a little too stripped down. Like, I wish there was more UI, honestly.
Yeah.
Because like there's only this one meter that's on the screen. There's no like little map of the racetrack. And there's no way to see how much energy you have left, because I would like that too. Unless that's what the meter is. But I'm not clear on that, because there's no like, you know, on-screen, you know, information about what that is. It's just like a red bar that is most of the time full, but sometimes not.
Yeah, I mean, I from reading the instructions, I think the way it works is that your meter, or that meter, changes colors based on your current condition. Like, if you're running into the side of the road a lot, your dampeners or shields or whatever they call them,
yeah,
might go away temporarily, and you have to wait for them to charge up, or else you'll start taking damage when you collide with things. In a way, like, again, it's more of this over-engineered stuff, but also it seems to have been put in there with the intention of making it so that you're not just exploding constantly, which I really appreciate. Yeah, they do a lot to keep you in the race.
So it's like, it's an odd game because in some senses it's really over-engineered, but in others it's really kind of almost too stripped down. There's very little in the way of, like, drama around, like, the start and end of these races. Like, you get a music track that plays right from the second the race starts, and when the screen comes up for the race to start, you're just going. There's no, like, countdown timer or anything.
Yeah.
And there's not, like, any real drama to that whole thing. And I don't know. I feel like it kind of goes hand in hand with the game sort of not giving you all the information you would like. It's like nobody really seemed to consider what the overall shape of this should be in some ways. Because, like, what's there is all right, but it feels like it's not being treated very well by the way it's arranged.
I kind of get a little chuckle about how fast these races start, because I'm sort of conditioned by games like Mario Kart to not just immediately start, you know, hitting the gas button.
Right, but you should have your finger on the gas, like, when the screen is coming, coming up, honestly.
Like, the boss car just zooms past you immediately as if to just say, like, yeah, fuck you, man, I'm out of here! It's just gone.
Yeah, which I guess is on brand for the world here.
I suppose.
Most of these people are pretty rude. Like, you get a little, like, kind of fighting game style, like, trash talk before the races start, but yeah.
Like, yeah, but this is where I ran into problems with the lack of UI, because I really wanted to know, I wanted to have some idea of, like, how far ahead did this guy just get of me?
Exactly. You know,
like, because I could go through an entire boss race and not even see the boss outside of, like, when he first passes me right at the start.
Right.
And so I'm just kind of like, okay, am I severely underpowered for this? Am I meant to, like, go and re-race a whole bunch to build up all of my equipment?
Right.
Or am I doing something wrong here? Or, you know, like, I don't have a good idea of just how badly I'm being beaten. I feel like it's probably pretty badly.
Yeah.
Like once he zooms past me, it's just like, well, I guess I might as well just start this race over now, because I have no hope of ever catching this person.
Yeah. Yeah, no. I feel that kind of thing ultimately ended up happening to me a bunch as well. Like, it's kind of odd because this is so much like F-Zero in some ways, but it is oddly lacking just sort of some good design fundamentals that I think F-Zero had. Like, I feel like you could get a better sense of the tracks in F-Zero as, like, places with, like, an architecture, like a structure to them, you know, where you're like, okay, I know what part of the track I'm on in this lap, at least, because I recognize it. Whereas in this game, a lot of the tracks do just kind of feel like big jumbles of, like, right angles and, like, you know, narrow curves, and it's, like, very hard to, like, get, especially since you're not ever given, like, an overall glimpse of, like, the shape of the track. It's very hard to feel like you know where, how far into a lap you are, and when you can't see the boss car that you're racing against, it's just like, okay, I'm just gonna keep reacting to this track as it appears, and hopefully that means I'll win eventually.
I don't know if I think it's amazing, but what does seem pretty cool about this game are some of the multiplayer modes it has, which obviously we didn't really get a chance to check out, but the two-player mode,
I like the idea of these.
The two-player mode seems pretty cool. Like, you know, it's sort of more of a competition between the two players in the cross-country sections, where the winner gets a little bit extra, I think. Like, I don't think they actually take away anything from the loser. It's just that the winner gets a little bit extra, which I think is a cool system. And then both of the players are racing against the boss. Only one of them actually has to beat them. So yeah, you know, I think it's a cool idea, but then there's also like an 8-player mode where, you know, like you just have two people racing, the loser drops out, and then it, you know, it kind of cycles around to everybody, and, you know, with the loser continuously, passing the controller off to somebody else. That seems like a pretty cool and engaging mode.
That seems like a fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or up to 8 players, I should say. You don't have to play the full 8 players, I don't think.
Right, right.
But that's cool that it will keep track of all of those players individually and just kind of say, like, hey, this player, you're up now. And that seems like a pretty cool little party mode. Like, I think this game seems like it is better played with a group.
I think you are right. I think you are almost certainly correct there. Because I think that, you know, yeah, okay, this doesn't, like, control as well as F-Zero, and the track layouts aren't as good, but there's something, there's some solid enough design work here that I think it would really sing if you were playing with and against other actual humans instead of these, like, sort of vaguely defined, sort of cheap, you know, cheap shot taking AIs, you know?
Yeah, yeah. There's also, it just seems to be a lot more complexity to the controls than the game seems to let on from the outset. Like, you can...
Yeah, like, looking at all of those different maneuvers described in the instruction manual, it's like, really? Okay, I guess you can do that. Yeah.
Yeah, you can jump, you can turn, you can take turns a little bit harder. I guess you can, like, straight up just turn and face behind you briefly to fire weapons at people behind you. Is that,
that's an interesting idea. I think you did. I'm not sure. That bit was a little confusing in how it was described in the instruction manual. So I'm not 100% on that, but that was the impression I also got. So yeah.
Yeah. It seems like a lot for a game like this. I don't know if I would have the patience to try and learn all of these different techniques.
I think if the controls, honestly, there's a lot to the controls, but they don't feel that good to use. So I don't know that I would be, like, drawn to it enough for that. Like, I will say one thing, this game, like, you know, I do think the concept of, like, essentially half of this game being made up of, like, 1v1, like, racing duels with other with the computer characters is pretty clever, and it does give this a different enough, like, feel from F-Zero that I do like that in principle. And when it works, when you are, like, kind of neck and neck with them and, like, trading first place back and forth, it is pretty compelling. I will say that. But yeah, I don't know that the overall feel of the game is good enough that just on my lonesome, I would want to, like, commit a lot of time to it.
Yeah. So I don't know. I mean, this one's okay, but I don't know if I would ever go back to this.
I don't think I would. It's interesting. Cause, like, when we read about this in this month's Nintendo Power, we were both like, oh, this seems pretty interesting. And it's like, yeah, I think on paper, this does seem pretty interesting. But yeah, it's just not really, I don't know, it doesn't come together. And that's a shame because I think there's some good stuff here. And honestly, pretty good, pretty effective use of the Mode 7. Like, I wish the tracks were better, but in terms of being like a Mode 7 racing game, we've never really seen anybody else try to bite off like the F-Zero kind of setup as hard as this. And, you know, I appreciate the effort. I appreciate somebody that's not Nintendo trying this out. But yeah, it's just kind of right. To me, this is kind of right in the middle, which I should say is a big improvement from how I felt when I played it last night, when I was like, this is trash. This feels like it is in like Space Football 101, one-on-one territory in terms of being like incomprehensible and annoying. So I came up a lot on this, but only kind of right to the middle.
Yeah. Also, we get classic snark in the instruction manual. Like,
we do.
Read this section or you might end up in the ditch with a serious shortage of bandages.
So, oh man!
They got me. They
They did.
They roasted me right there. Oh, they're right. I do
they
have
got your number.
I have a shortage of bandages right now. I should get more bandages in case I ever need them. It's so weird. It's so like the tone of all these instruction manual of so many of these instruction manuals is just so weird that you almost like, who wrote this? Are they okay? Were they going through a thing?
That was the style of the time. In your face, you know, edgy, cool attitude.
Yeah, I'm really edgy, but also like I want to be really edgy for this, but also I'm just a copywriter, man. Like, what do you want from me? They seriously tapped me to do this yesterday, and now I've got it. You know, like I've never played a video game, man.
It's like, look, I wrote this in 2 hours. It's pretty good, right?
Yeah.
For that?
So last night I was kind of thinking this might be solid B tier territory, but
yeah.
After playing it today, I kind of feel like this is maybe more like a C. What do you think?
Yeah, I think this is a C. I think this is very, very solidly a C.
So congratulations, I guess. Battle Cars, you're...
You are unfortunately a game I think neither of us is going to remember practically at all in 6 months.
I mean, but I will definitely remember Spiky Car. Spiky Car has a very striking design to it that
yeah, you know what, this is something I will say, the sprite work for the cars is gorgeous in this game. Yeah. Like when you win, you get a good like 360 rotation image of whatever car you're using, and they look phenomenal. They look absolutely beautiful. So yeah, and the one that's just like a bunch of spikes coming off of it is insane looking. Like, yeah. I really like it.
Honestly, like Spiky Car for this game will probably be what Cool Jacket was to whichever tennis game it was that has the Cool Jacket.
Legit. Yeah, no, that's fair. That's a very memorable thing from this game. Yeah.
Even though I am just admitting I don't remember exactly which game it was. I keep wanting to say it was Jimmy Connor, but I don't know for sure if it
I think he might be right. That sounds right enough to
Jimmy
me.
Jimmy Connor.
Yeah.
Or might have been David Crane. We can figure that one out later. In any case, we've got more vehicles to crash.
We sure do. On purpose this time.
Yeah, yeah. Let's talk about Super Chase HQ.
Yeah.
So this is a game that comes to us from Taito, developed and published by Taito. Although this is based on an arcade game just called Chase HQ. This is actually a sequel to that game, as I said earlier.
So this is actually, it's interesting. The Wikipedia page for this says a thing that I do not think is entirely true, which is that this is a home game version of the arcade, like, second sequel to Chase HQ,
actually
Super Chase Criminal Termination.
Actually, no, you know what? Actually, okay. It might be a little bit complicated because Moby Games has them as one and the same as well. This was a really hard game to pin down because Super Chase HQ just goes to an error page.
Okay.
There's a Super Chase HQ 2 for the Genesis. So they might actually be correct. I think this is actually... So I may have misspoken when I said earlier that this was a SNES exclusive based on an arcade series. I think this is actually something of a port of...
It's something of a port of Criminal Termination. Which is a buck wild name for a game.
This is kind of a buck wild series, honestly. Yes. Like, all right, so let's talk about what this game is.
Sure, yeah. Let's talk about it, yeah.
Okay, yeah, so this is a port of the arcade game Super Chase Criminal Termination, which was developed by an outfit called Project Power Wheels, which is credited on that game and that game alone. Taito ported this to the SNES and published it themselves. The original Chase HQ came out in 1988, also by Taito, featured similar gameplay to this game, in which you play as a cop behind the wheel of a sweet ride.
You're like a cool cop with a cool jacket and cool hair, and you're behind the wheels of a sweet ride.
Yeah, you're cool 80s cop who doesn't play by the rules, but damn it, he gets results.
That's right.
And those results are trying to catch up to criminals in their vehicles as they are driving on public roads yeah. and ramming into them until their car is disabled.
Yeah.
The original game featured a zoomed out over the top view of your car, similar to Outrun. This game for the Super NES puts you right in the driver's seat. And yeah, so yeah, you're playing as a cop who are we going to get, you know, we've got all this intel about all these smuggling operations.
Well, sometimes it's smuggling. Sometimes it's blowing up public places.
Yeah. Sometimes like, it's just a break-in. Yeah, it's just a straight up break-in.
Yeah. The crimes vary wildly from like legit, you know, like terrorism that probably killed people to, yeah, these people robbed a jewelry store and stole an expensive car. You need to now destroy the expensive car by ramming into it a bunch so that you can catch them.
Yeah, while speeding through, you know, public streets yeah. with reckless abandon.
Yep. This is, yeah, so this is essentially like, what if Outrun was about car chases, basically? Like, that's what the yeah. concept of this is. It's like a driving game, but not a racing game. But it is an action game because you were essentially involved in protracted, like, vehicular boss fights with these other cars. So it's a weird idea. I don't think anybody else has ever made a whole game that is just this.
Yeah, it's a driving game that is not a racing game, and I don't think that's something you can say about any other game on the Super Nintendo.
No, I don't think so either. Because, your whole thing is you've got a timer, and the timer does get time added onto it at certain points in the chase, essentially, assuming that you are keeping up with them. But, yeah, you've got to catch up to the criminal car, possibly avoid or dispatch some like goons in other vehicles on the way there. And then, once you get there, your car and their car both have life meters, and you just gotta bump that bad boy until it falls apart. You can capture the goons. And yeah, that's the game. That's the whole thing. You got some nitros.
That is the whole game.
Some pretty different levels. There's like five different levels, and they have different sort of backgrounds. Sometimes they have oncoming traffic that you have to sort of weave between as well. The boss cars get a lot more like eventually you're fighting one that has a rocket launcher attached to it. I do not know how you're supposed to avoid those rockets. I have to be honest.
Yeah.
I
don't know how you're supposed to avoid a lot of stuff in this game. Like I finally got good at weaving around the cars. Uh-huh. But like in the second level, motorcyclists appear at some point and they just throw Molotov cocktails at you. And it seems like no matter what I did, I would always get hit.
Yeah, I don't know how to avoid those.
It seemed like the game was just saying like, okay, here's the part where you get hit. So you're only going to have this much health for the boss fight and you've got to do.
Yeah.
Like, is that what it was? What? Just give me less health for that.
Yeah, I know. Cause like the guys with Molotovs, like there's not really anything you can do about them. They're just there to like hurt you a certain amount, basically. There's probably some way to avoid it, but I don't know. I did want to talk about this game for a while, just on its own merits before bringing up the arcade game this is based on. But I do think it's time to mention it. Because there are some real fundamental differences the way in which this is an adaptation of Criminal Termination is that the view is inside the car. It's like a first-person view. That was what Criminal Termination did. That's what this game does. They're not really that similar apart from that, though, partially because Criminal Termination is like a bleeding-edge, like technical showpiece arcade game with like you know, different changes in elevation, a bunch of like really specific, unique like gags that happen all along the road, and the car, the perspective will strategically, it seems like, zoom in and out of the car. So sometimes it's still behind the car, seemingly for instances where it would be too hard to like see what's going on around you without that. And I wish this game had the ability to do that on the Super Nintendo, because sometimes the car is way too, like, I feel like there's no way to avoid hazards sometimes because of that.
Yeah. Yeah, it feels kind of choppy in a way. Like, you'll see a car in the distance that you're going to have to avoid, and it's like, okay, is it changing lanes? It's hard to tell because, like, it seems like the car will just suddenly be in a different lane, and I don't know if it's a weird perspective thing.
Right.
I don't know if it's a bad animation thing. I'm not sure, but it's really, really tough to avoid cars sometimes. Mm-hmm. And yeah, not a whole lot of, you know, changes in elevation or anything like that. Sometimes you'll go through tunnels. Yep. So I guess that's exciting.
Tunnels are kind of cool. A couple of the later levels, it does become darker over the course of the level. That's kind of neat. You know, like,
yeah,
like, you know, night's kind of rolling in. That's kind of a similar effect to some stuff we saw in like the Top Gear games, I guess. But yeah, like the spectacle really takes a hit here, and spectacle seems to be like a lot of what the arcade version of this game in particular was about. Like it was basically almost like a theme park ride, the degree of like crazy stuff happening on screen.
So you know, it's an interesting idea. It's definitely a unique kind of game, especially for the Super Nintendo. I can't think of any other games like this.
No.
I'm going to get on my leftist BS here, but like,
no, it's sort of, we got to do it whenever there's like a cop game, basically, you know?
I mean, like, I'm always tempted to just say like, you know, ACAB applies here, so we can't rate this game too highly, but I particularly hate this game for the implications here.
Okay.
I think it's actually really disgusting. Hey everyone, Future Chase here. So I kind of go on a rant at this point about a big problem that I have with this game. It's a political opinion that a lot of you can probably see coming. But after having had some time to think about it more, I think I'd like to more efficiently and eloquently articulate my feelings about this game and why I think it's worse than your average cop game. So I'm just going to do that here and spare you guys the lengthy, somewhat incoherent rant that I went on when we recorded this. So a lot of games in which you play as a cop, like Lethal Weapon, for example, you know, that game is a 2D side-scrolling platformer where you navigate through levels, and there's sort of an understanding that every person that you encounter and fight or defeat or kill or whatever is a bad guy. It's silly, but it's pretty typical video game logic, so I kind of accept it. That conceit doesn't really exist in this game. Like, it's silly to play as a cop who just goes out in a cool car to chase down a criminal rather than waiting for them when they know more or less who they are and where they're going. You know, I mean, we were just laughing about it, right? But when you zoom out a bit, it's kind of not that absurd, and that's what I really don't like about this. Cops chase after people all of the time, and they do it for a variety of reasons, from a broken tail light to reckless driving. And I don't think in any of these situations, like, that any of these situations are helped from a, you know, safety of just all of the other people on the road perspective by adding another car speeding through, trying to pursue them with flashing lights and loud noises. The cops aren't there to keep us safe. They're there to punish people and collect money while endangering others on the road. And let's face it, most of us are only driving on that road in the first place because owning and maintaining a car isn't really up to us in a car-dependent society. So the idea of playing a cop in a cool race car that's going around actively endangering everyone else out on the road to act out his weird action movie fantasy against a criminal feels a little bit too on the nose. And it's honestly just all I can think about when I try to enjoy this game. Now, this isn't to say that I think the creators of this game set out to make blatant copaganda. It feels more like a symptom of cop culture than a celebration of it. And if you don't see it this way, if you think that it's, you know, this is just a game, it's not that bad, or if you think that I am taking this way too seriously, you know, all those thoughts are completely valid. You know, like, I don't think that you have a bad take or are a bad person because you think that I am taking this too seriously or that, it, you know, this game is not that big of a deal. That is totally fine. That is your opinion, and I respect that. This is just my feeling about the game. And with all that out of the way, I will take you back to your regularly scheduled podcast. Where were you thinking this game belongs? I'm just out of curiosity before I said anything about it.
Yeah, sure. So my feeling about this game, I agree with what you said. It is an unfortunate part of our world that, like, pro police propaganda has inundated us for decades and decades. And yeah, I think we do owe it to ourselves to, like, look at this, be aware that this stuff does provide cover and justification for, like, cops in the real world to do horrible shit and for people to just assume their best intentions about stuff. Like, looking at a game like this, where everything is being filtered through really glossy, like, 80s and 90s, like, action movie tropes, which are then being filtered through anime aesthetic, like, reinterpretations of those. Like, this to me feels more than anything like a big old end of history sort of game, you know?
Yeah.
The politics of this are completely, like, on the surface, but also completely invisible, because it is done with this, the justification for you chasing all these people is always, these are violent criminals, they're big evil gang members, you're not really killing anybody, you're just driving them off the road so they can be arrested and brought to, you know, justice for their crimes. None of these people have an ideology. None of these people have a reason they're doing any of this. They're just bad guys. It's hard for me to look at this and be like, this thing in and of itself is causing, like, the biggest harm, because it's just like a tiny little drop in a really big, gross bucket. And that makes it easier for me to just look at it as, like, a game and be like, yeah, you know, it is what it is. I mean, it's got nice music and graphics. I don't think it has much replay value, but it is pretty fun to play. So I would have put this as a C-tier game as well, just because I think it is not capable of doing most of the really spectacular stuff that the arcade game is doing, but it is kind of fun in its own right.
Here's the other thing. Like, here was the thing that really kind of sent me over the edge with this game.
Okay.
Was I finished the second mission. It was apparently some corrupt city council person and another city council person saying, like, yeah, now that we've, you know, apprehended this guy, this is going to affect the gang and their ability to riot. And I was like, wait, what?
Mm-hmm.
This idea that, like, oh, there's just riot gangs. They're doing it for the love of rioting, when, like,
uh-huh.
Look at any historical riot. People are rioting. They are unhappy about something that their city council people or mayors or senators or presidents are not doing anything to help them with.
Yeah.
Like, that was really the thing that just absolutely set me off. But I'm okay with, you know, stepping off of the soapbox. If you thought it was a C, I think it's an F. If you're cool with putting it in D, I'm okay with that.
Yeah.
All right. Well, shall we move on to the final game for today?
Let's do it.
That game is Super Nova. So Supernova, this is known as Darius Force in other territories and is part of Taito's Darius series. Not really sure why they dropped the Darius name from the U.S. title, but...
Very mysterious, yeah, I agree. Because they didn't drop it from the rest of the game. It's still all over the game itself once you start it up. So very odd, but Darius Force, Supernova, What's the story?
Well, the story is that this is a sequel to Darius Twin, which, like this game, was a fully original entry in the Darius series for the Super NES / Super Famicom. These are not direct ports of any other Darius arcade game that I am aware of, but they are in that overall series. Yeah, this is another game developed and published by Taito Core. Taito was founded in Tokyo in 1953 by Michael Kogan. And you might be thinking, hey, that's not a very Japanese name. And you would be right about that. And there's an interesting story there. And that just happens to be the subject of today's deep dive. And I do want to say right up front that most of the info that I'm about to dump on y'all comes from the book They Create Worlds by Alexander Smith. Seems like a pretty cool book. It's very big, a lot of early video game stuff in there that is not just focused on the American side of things, like a lot of video game history books in English tend to be. So I happen to find a copy at my local library. So this episode brought to you by your local library. Check it out. It's pretty cool. It's one of the few good things our government does.
Yeah.
So Kogan's story starts in 1920 in Odessa, Ukraine, or as it was known at the time, the Ukrainian People's Republic. Just 2 years after Michael's birth, it would become known as the Ukrainian Soviet Socialist Republic after the victory of the Red Army in the Russian Civil War. This was bad news for Kogan's family, as they were Jewish, and this new communist regime weren't all that fond of the Jews. Kogan's family would end up fleeing to Manchuria in 1929, a few years before Japan would come to occupy the area. The Japanese at the time, not terribly fond of the Jews either, but luckily for Kogan, one of the military leaders in Manchuria, Colonel Norihiro Yasue, had bought into the anti-Semitic conspiracy theory to the extent that he believed the supposed control over worldwide financial institutions and media that the Jews apparently had, according to them, could be exploited to raise Japan's world status. He and others created the Fugu Plan, in which Jewish immigrants in Manchuria would be brought into Japanese cities. This plan never truly came to fruition, but this less-than-hostile attitude towards Jewish people allowed folks like Kogan some leeway into Japanese society. Kogan would end up traveling to Tokyo on his own to study economics at Waseda University. In 1944, he moved to Shanghai to start his first business with his father. They named their company Taitung. This company specialized in floor coverings, hog bristles, and natural hair wigs.
Gotta start somewhere.
Once communism took over in China, Kogan returned to Japan where he started his next business, which he called Taito Yoko, which was an import business dealing in clothing and other products. This business didn't do so well and wound down in 1953. But he would later start a new business with lawyer / karate instructor Akio Nakatani. They started a new company, which Kogan simply titled Taito. Really seemed attached to that name. Which started out as a vodka distillery that also dabbled in importing peanut vending machines. So Taito would abandon the vodka business by 1955, but they were on to something with the whole vending machine thing, which led to the company entering the jukebox business. Now, unfortunately, Kogan was not able to secure a license to import jukeboxes from the United States, but he was able to salvage broken ones from U.S. military bases to repair and sell. The business apparently went well enough that Taito would become the official Japanese distributor of AMI jukeboxes in 1958. Kogan would remain with the company as it ventured into more coin-op entertainment products, including pinball tables, as Taito would end up bringing Gottlieb tables to Japan, and eventually became the arcade company that would bring the world Space Invaders. Now, Kogan didn't create that game himself, but he did have some impact on its design. In Smith's book, it said that engineer Tomohiro Nishikado initially thought of making the invading army human, but Kogan was never keen on the idea of making people the targets in any of Taito's games. Sadly, Michael Kogan would pass away in 1984 while on a business trip in LA, leaving the company to his son, Abraham. And that's pretty much Kogan's story in a nutshell. Sounds like that guy lived a very wild life.
Yeah, fascinating. I would never have guessed that was like where the origin point of Taito is. Like, that's wild. And a guy with a life of wall-to-wall incident, like, always, like, it seems like basically every part of that man's life was, like, I don't know, some kind of noteworthy event. So, yeah, I mean, good for him. He founded a company that I believe is still going today. Taito never got, you know, folded into something else and then shut down, right?
I don't know what the status of Taito is now. I do know that there was a point at which Taito and Sega almost combined pretty early on, but Taito backed out of that at the last minute. I believe, like, you know, Kogan himself backed out of that deal at the last minute. So, but there was some, like, talk about consolidating certain companies in Japan.
Yeah, it is apparently Taito is in fact a part of Square Enix now. So never mind.
Okay. Yeah.
But yeah, still an independent unit within Square Enix, apparently, like, not just, like, you know, Square Enix has their assets or anything, but they do own them. So
Supernova, this is a shmup. It is a horizontally scrolling shmup where you are a spaceship blasting other little enemy spaceships. There's some story there, but I'll be honest, I don't really remember what it is.
No, I mean, it's basically like you are, you know, you're a pilot of a you know, space fighter ship, and you are striking back against evil invading alien forces from beyond the solar system, your solar system, not Earth's solar system, because I don't think that Earth has any part in this. All the boss monsters are big robot fishes, because this is a Darius game and that's what they've got. And that's story-wise what this game is, I think.
Yeah. So you get to select from one of three ships at the very beginning. They all look the same, but they
have different weapons, though.
Yeah, they have different weapons, and their upgrade paths are all a little bit different. It's kind of interesting what they do here. I think one ship is based on the ship from original Darius. One is based on the ship from Darius 2, and the last one is sort of a new creation for this game.
Yeah, and I actually liked that one the most because it has, like, basically the big difference with that one is that it has an alternate mode where you can fire these, like, kind of weak green lasers diagonally from it. And I found those really useful once they were powered up a little bit for hitting things that are along the floor and ceiling of the levels. So, yeah.
Yeah. And that kind of brings me to where this game starts kind of not really vibing with me, is that it's really hard to upgrade your weapons in this game.
It sure is.
In order to upgrade, you have to clear out certain formations of enemies. Not every enemy formation will drop an item, only specific ones, or destroy a blinking asteroid in the middle of an asteroid field. And those segments are just really frustrating.
I think the difficulty level of this game is insane. Mm-hmm. And, like, the first level specifically, the difficulty level, like, it feels mean-spirited to me in a way that was kind of shocking. So there are a couple of fundamental differences between this and Darius Twin. There's a lot that's the same, you know, the ship has sort of, you know, roughly the same kind of controls and everything. And you do get to select what level you're going to next. But unlike Darius Twin, you do respawn, you do restart from a checkpoint in the level instead of just having your new ship, you know, appear on screen when you die, which means that you, especially until you get your hands on a shield, are super vulnerable and can get taken down by, you know, so many different things, and then have to replay significant portions of the level. And the first level especially loves to just stream in lines of enemies from odd places you wouldn't necessarily expect, just seemingly to kill you. And you've just got to go through it enough that you memorize where those things are, because it can be genuinely difficult, I found, to plan for where they might be coming from and dodge them enough. And yeah, because of that, really hard to get and to hold on to any upgrades for your ship.
Yeah, and I think another thing this game really does wrong is because so few specific formations actually grant you power-ups, this game kind of rewards you for not engaging in the combat. Like at one point... At one point in the first level, this really large ship comes up, and the first time I encountered it, I didn't damage it enough to destroy it before it left the screen. So I was like, oh, I bet it would have dropped something if I had destroyed it in time. So yeah. When I played again, no, it didn't drop anything. So it's like, so really the game just punishes me for engaging in this fight because I'm more at risk of dying. Like there's no,
I mean, I guess you probably do get one-ups from getting your score high enough. That's usually the way these games work. I don't know if that's true here, but that's the only thing I can see because yeah, it's not really giving you a lot of feedback that would make you want to be really aggressive, I guess.
Yeah. So, you know, like something like Gradius, you know, a lot of enemies drop power ups. So it's in your best interest to try and destroy as many of them as possible and not just be passive throughout the game. This game doesn't do that. And it's kind of weird. It you know, you just feel like you're better off avoiding most things and it's not very fun. And then, when you get to those asteroid field segments where asteroids can come from almost anywhere.
Nightmare. Absolutely. Like, it's like the opposite of fun, frankly.
And that's where they expect you to be looking out for these flashing asteroids, which are very hard to tell, especially since a lot of the flashing ones will be moving extremely quickly. So, you know, it's really hard to actually get any benefit from that, from those sequences. Those sequences are a lot more likely to mess you up than they are to help you out. I don't think this is a particularly fun one of these. There's no two-player co-op like there was in Darius Twin. This game feels actively worse in every way than it's than the game that came before it.
I agree in most respects with what you're saying, but I did find that the further I got into this game, the better it got. Like, I think some of the later levels, not even like the later levels, but the levels that are like past that first one, do have some kind of like good gimmicks going on, like changing the scrolling suddenly so that you're like going up or down, or you know, putting like different kinds of like stage hazards in. But yeah, like I went back and played some of Darius Twin after this, and like that is just a better game. Like it's faster, it feels more, I don't know, fair. It does most of the same stuff this one does, honestly. It just doesn't drag out the levels as long, and it doesn't make you restart at checkpoints that make it very hard to get out of the hole that you find yourself in with suddenly having an unpowered ship halfway through the level. So yeah, I don't know. It's just it's like they made a bunch of choices that make the game worse, and they've hidden better parts of it behind a really, really obnoxious beginning.
Yeah. It just makes me not want to engage with this one much at all. I didn't make it much further. I think I beat the first boss once and managed to get to another stage, but I don't know. I just didn't find this one very engaging at all.
I think it's got some real issues. Yeah.
And again, like I am not a huge shmup fan to begin with, so you know your mileage may vary on this.
Yeah,
people at home, but yeah, I didn't find this one very fun at all. So.
I mean, the thing for me is that I like. You know, I do, generally speaking, I can love a game like this. I can really enjoy a game like this in the right circumstances. I don't love every one of them, but it's a genre that doesn't, like, turn me off particularly. But I do find that one of the things that a lot of the shmups that I like do is that, like, what they kind of achieve is getting you into a state of, like, hyper awareness where you can kind of get a sense from like the way patterns of bullets or patterns of enemies are moving, what you actually need to be worried about on any particular screen. And like, basically like getting you to like take a second, calm down and not panic when you see a ton of bullets on the screen, because once you're used to it enough, you can see that as long as you don't do anything, you know, really dramatic or stupid, there's not actually very many of them that are a problem for you. And that is not what this game does. This game genuinely gives you very few warnings or, you know, ways to learn the way that a particular setup is going to work before it just kills you. And I don't like that. I don't appreciate that.
Yeah. Yeah. So I don't know. Where do you think this one goes? Cause
it's probably a D, honestly. It's probably a D. Like, I think that's like, it's not broken, but it is worse in every way that I can really see, aside from maybe graphically, than the previous game in the series. And in this genre, there's a lot of games like this that I would recommend on the Super Nintendo.
Yeah, that's kind of the other problem this game has, is that there's just so many shmups that you can't afford to be a mediocre one on the system. So,
nah.
Yeah.
Nah.
All right. I'm totally fine. Because, yeah, I don't think it belongs in F, because I don't think it's like a broken game. But, yeah, it ain't good. So,
yeah.
All right. Well.
And I do want everyone to keep in mind, thinking about what I said about this game and about Chase HQ, these are my improved opinions after playing these games again today. I must have been in the worst mood last night when I was playing these, because I was like, oh my God, we're doing a featured episode about these? What are we doing? And I don't feel that way anymore. I think these were very, very fine games to do a whole episode about. I don't think any of them are particularly good.
Look, we're getting into the months where we've got like 20 something games to get through. So some of them, maybe even ones that in another month that is less stacked wouldn't have been featured, are going to have to be featured here, you know?
Yeah, yeah, definitely. Just wait till the wrap up episode, folks. You will see us really deal with some crap.
Just not deal with some of them, because
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh boy. Well, with all those three down, where ought we go next for December 1993?
How do you feel about dipping into some platform games?
Such as Jim Power, Lost Dimension in 3D, Inspector Gadget, and The Adventures of Dr. Franken?
Yeah, some platform games like that.
Okay, that sounds great. Let's talk about some of those next time.
All right, so please join us next time as we discuss the three games that Chase just listed. We hope you have an excellent week. And until next time, I'm NE0.
I'm Chase Keys.
Play it loud.
For show notes, game rankings, links to social media, research references, and more, check out our website, snescapades.show. Our intro-outro song is How Now Brown Cow by TechnoAx, who very generously offers a ton of great music for free at technoax.com, TEKNOAXE.com. Thanks for listening.